This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, ahoy and welcome to Always There, the Howard's Way podcast. I'm Julia Rayside. Thank you for joining me as I navigate through every single episode of the 1980s seafaring soap opera set in the fictional English coastal town of Tarrant. It will be a lonely voyage without you. This is part two of my chat with Paul Litchfield. So if you haven't heard part one yet, do go back and find that now on the feed, and then we'll see you back here after you've listened.
She's very buoyant at the moment, isn't she? Her businesses are doing really well.
Nice. Buoyant. Like it.
Buoyancy. She's got a rich old millionaire that she might be able to hoodwink.
She already has. He's given her loads of money.
So she's like, I'm in the money. I'm doing well. And she's still got a soft spot for Tom, isn't she?
Yes. No, they're very good friends.
Yeah. Now. So I think it's maybe purely good intentions at this stage, which can always change.
I think
change.
So. But obviously the tension is introduced that they can't tell Jack because Jack won't take kindly to another person coming in and having a stake in his yard. He's always torn between the yard staying in his family, but then needing money from outside to keep going.
Yeah,
it's a dying duck, it really is.
If he was in Star Trek, he's very much a Klingon. He's in that weird sort of, perhaps today is a good day to die. No, you don't have to die. No, I want to. That's just Jack's way of thinking. Here's some help, it's readily available. I don't need help.
You're right, he's a Klingon, that's exactly what he is.
He's definitely a Klingon. Which then means Leo is a Romulan. That makes perfect sense as well.
No, I'm glad. Well, this is the analysis we need.
This is finally, you've got it, yeah.
Thank heavens you were here. Back at Highfield, Sir Edward and Sir John are hitting balls together.
Into the fountain.
Yes. And there's more talk about Grunwald. He's the most talked about off-screen character this series. Like, he's just talked about every episode.
Brilliant name as well. Brilliant name.
Grunwald. And yes, constant. I think his first name's Werner. So I always prefer Herzog, obviously. That's my favourite Werner. But it would be great if he could arrive and he was played by Werner Herzog. That would be amazing.
Oh, my God.
Did you see, my son and my husband have been watching The Mandalorian, and I didn't know that Werner Herzog was in The Mandalorian.
I know, and I was just like, oh my God, why is he in this? Why is he
brilliant
in this? Why can't he be in this all the time?
It's so brilliant.
Yeah, he's just like, stunning,
of course,
isn't he?
Love him so much. Anyway, they're hitting balls. They're talking about Grunwald. AFTC chairman comes up again. Turns out Edward's old pal is the chairman of this company. You'd think Charles would know that. He does his research.
Yeah.
He clearly doesn't know that. So he's in a position again to stymie another thing that Charles is doing.
And I think they miss a trick in this scene because there should always be, when you're in a really rich old mansion full of business, etc., etc.
Yeah.
When they leave the scene, this is the ideal moment for a comedy butler just to come in with a tiny crab net, just fishing out the Gulf. Yes, I suppose I'll do that for you, your lordship. Then when they're out of shot, stupid little shit.
I mean, that is the kind of part you were born to play.
Oh my God, I would have loved any comedy butler, mate. Elevates anything.
Terence Rascomb is always very good at those.
Oh, Frank Finlay plays one, and I can't remember the exact film, but there's an amazing bit where every day they've been having soup. One day they turn to Frank Finlay, who's the butler, and the woman goes, "This soup tastes a bit funny. What's different?" And he just goes, "I haven't pissed in it today." And they're like, "Oh!" And they're really annoyed. So they're sort of implying, "Well, take it into the kitchen and piss in it, because that's how we like it." I wish I could remember the film, but it's brilliant.
See, again, I can see you in that role.
Comedy butler.
Perfectly.
house.
Then we go, sans comedy butler, to sad Sarah's house where she remains sad. Oh. Ken tries to, I think, sort of hold her around the shoulders or something. She's like, don't touch me.
Yeah,
she's so sickened by what they've done, the guilt. And she says to Ken, we killed him. We killed
him.
Yeah,
you see, this kept bolstering my God, have they murdered him? What's been going on?
But yeah, no, they didn't physically.
This is just emotional guilt, pure and simple.
Yeah, he did it to punish them.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I mean, no one wins here, but
no.
Yes, he did the right thing. His plan worked. Then we go to Leo on a wet bike, bouncing across the waves. Boom, 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 boom. I was wondering these scenes, how many times they had to do it, because he kind of comes into a stop at the quayside, but he has to put one foot on the pontoon.
I reckon Leo can do that sort of stuff in one take.
I think,
but
think
I reckon
so?
There's
yeah.
about 58 takes sometimes for him to deliver one line. And that's the thing
unkind.
About Leo.
That's so mean.
No, but that's the thing.
He does have a sign on his head saying, bully me, the
he
character.
He really does, yeah. He does have a kick me sign permanently tattooed on him.
Bless his heart.
I know, it's not his
anyway,
fault.
Like, the action man he is, he pulls into the side there, gets off his wet bike to find his dad sitting on the quayside eating sandwiches. And they talk about relationships. They have a nice father-son chat.
Bond.
And then Leo says, I don't know if it all isn't just a bit of a bloody nuisance. And he literally does say it like that, which is great. He can't work Amanda out. I mean, he should be able to. She's just basically, yes, she's beautiful, but she's clearly mental. Run, don't walk away. But he just seems inexorably pulled towards her.
Tom does the whole, come on, love is worth it. I mean, it's an absolute bloody nightmare, but it's worth it in the end.
Tom always does say that. He's still, despite all the pitfalls and the end of his marriage to Jan and then the end of his relationship with Avril, he still believes in love. He's a romantic at heart. And he says loving somebody is still worth the risk.
That's right.
Which is very sweet. And then, end of scene, Emma arrives. I think I know what happened to the catamaran. Like, big news.
The Lynette.
Yeah. And we're like, oh my God, every day saved. Incredible. End of scene.
Yeah.
And then we go to Relton Marine, where Avril and Charles are talking, and she's just being impressive about brochures and carefully selected clients. And just, you know, nice things in the 80s to do with business and success. And then he says, still okay for the weekend? See you at the heliport.
See you at the heliport, which is what? Where is the heliport in Tarrant?
Come on, you'd go out with someone who said, see me at the heliport. Like, you'd go,
drop of a
hat. I'm there.
Yeah. Even if they told me, we're going to throw you out of the helicopter midway, I'm still, well, I just want to really go to the heliport.
Yeah, but you might say, sorry, and because I don't have a helicopter, where is the heli? Oh, no, he's gone.
He's gone.
I'll find it.
I just have to work out where the heliport is. Heliport might be. It's sort of the thing you go around with all the locals and they're like, I have absolutely no idea. It's like, well, come on, it's a heliport. It's the weirdest thing around here. I have no idea.
Big and flat. There won't be many trees.
Yeah.
Just like, where?
It's got this massive consonant written about 400, the letter H somewhere.
Then we go to, I think it's lunchtime later that day.
Oh, this is brilliant. Jan ends up eating in what looks like the Acorn Antique set that they've turned into a restaurant.
It is. It's got lots of extras, this one. So clearly
brilliant.
The budget for the essays has gone way up.
And again, you don't see a scant. Actually, there's a brief mention of a scallop, but you don't get to see any food, which proves your theory right
again. No, the camera just stays carefully above the tables. Might be a glass, the odd glass of Ribena being red wine, but no food to speak of.
Clearly, this is the only restaurant in Tarrant because everyone is there.
It's always full. It's like a weekday lunchtime, rammed to the rafters.
Does it have a name? A restaurant? Is it like a regular place that they visit?
It looks. I see. I'm never sure because there's a really posh restaurant where the good business lunches and the rich people do their romantic wooing at Casper's.
Right, Casper's.
Apparently, the restaurant in the Savoy is called Casper's, and maybe that's where the producers decided they would nick the name from.
Got you.
But and this looks a bit like Casper's, but sometimes when there's loads of extras, it's really hard to see if it's the same place or not. Anyway, we're in the restaurant.
Yeah, there's lots of to and froing between about five or six major key players here. You've got Sir John, then you've got Jan.
It's quite a long scene.
Yeah, and there's lots of come over here. I wish to speak to you for a little bit.
Maybe that's why there's so many extras, because they knew they were going to film in that set for probably a good day and a half, 2 days.
Yeah.
So Jan is with a large table of business associates. She sees Ken sat alone and she goes over to see him, and Ken stands up, and it's the second time this series I've gone, bloody hell, Ken is tall.
Yeah, he's massive, isn't he? He's really long and lean.
Ken is very, very leggy.
Yeah.
And they have a brief chat where he says he's proud of her and look at you all successful.
Proud of her, but he also gives her a couple of sort of good natured Richard digs and also flirts with her severely again.
Well, because he's just been rejected by Sarah, so now he's like, well, back to the old one then. I mean, he's very binary in that way. He's just like, I just need a woman to validate me and tell me I'm attractive.
He's got like some weird sort of sexual autism. He's set on one thing and just move right to the other.
Well, remember, there's a saxophone playing constantly in his head. Like, he can't turn it down. So he has to keep seducing everything with breasts in a 5-centimeter radius. So, there's a little bit of him trying to suggest ownership of her.
Yeah.
Kicking back against that and saying, you didn't create me, Ken. He's like, I like to think I still own a little stake in you. He does physically still own a little stake in her boutique business, but that's because he wouldn't agree to her buying him out. So he's still trying to keep his claws in there. He's not quite done with her yet. But he is being so nice to her and like pouring on the compliments. And she's definitely flattered.
Yeah.
She's not flattered. And she has just had a snog with someone's dad, basically. So she's probably thinking, could go younger. Younger's quite hot and he's quite tall.
Younger, sociopathic.
But you know,
possibly senile.
There's not a huge choice of like really solidly eligible men in Tarrant. Like they're either rich and impressive, but you know, really not good people.
Has Jan and Charles never had a little dance?
No, never. Because Charles is after her daughter, you see.
Yeah.
And then
but
Charles
that doesn't
broke
mean it won't
heart.
Happen at some point. It's bound to happen at some point, isn't it?
Don't think so.
Okay.
I think even
for Howard's Way,
Well, no, because they didn't tend to cross the streams quite in that way, I think. There's that's not on the cards as far as I'm aware.
Okay. So
anyway,
they never ever get together. There's one scene, I think, in fourth series where they go dogging. But apart from that,
oh yeah, the dogging, obviously. Yeah. No, there's the Nazi dogging scene. Do you remember with the Nazis?
Yeah.
All looking at the
beautifully lit.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, it was like that Channel 4 documentary. It was wonderful.
Oh, I watched a bit of that last night and I had to stop.
No. They repeated that because they knew people would just go back for a second look while being sick into their own
hands.
Ken does say to Jan, I miss you.
Yeah, I miss you.
And her face sort of slightly changes to an expression that suggests someone just farted. Like she's been swallowing his compliments up until that point, and then he's turns on the big guns and says, you know, I miss you, in a bid to get her to say, oh, I miss you too. And she just looks a bit, I know what you're up to, mate, which I respected her for. Then Sir John arrives, sits at the bar, and Ken goes over to meet him. So we sort of follow him over. People have these meetings that are basically pointless because he's just telling him again what he's already told him in an earlier scene. You need to sort out the Sarah Foster situation.
Yes,
you need to get her
shirt. They just do
her
a little bit more plot exposition. It's exactly the same how Dallas and Dynasty used to work. Again, they never eat a meal.
Don't eat a meal. Don't resolve a plot.
They
just
normally have a large, stiff
bubbling
drink, have a bit of a conflab, say how wonderful each other is, then stick the knife in, and then they all go off their separate ways,
exactly,
don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So right at the end of the scene there, Jan looks over slightly wistfully at Ken.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, she's still thinking.
I've forgotten all the horrible things he used to constantly do to me on a 24-hour basis.
Yeah, or when he got my son beaten up that time by the paid thugs. Yeah. Yeah. No, she still finds something attractive in him.
Bad
and,
boy.
You know,
he's a bad boy, you see.
He's very tall as well,
he's
and
tall,
she clearly
bad
likes
boy
that. Anyway, he's a tall boy.
Yeah,
he's a piece of furniture.
He's a tall boy.
Back at the yard, Emma says she now knows her instincts tell her that the catamaran did hit something in the water, but they still need proof.
They
how are they going to get
need
that?
Need evidence.
Ball?
Well, what they need to do is get out on some tugboat and bloody well start dredging the bottom of the very sea itself to find evidence.
We were about to say digging. Like, I imagine, let's get a shovel and just dig in the sea.
Dig our way through the sea.
An awful lot of water doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So, yeah, that's a little bit of explanation. Next, we need to obviously cut to people on a boat getting ready to dive and have a look for wreckage. So then we go back to Gerald, who is just clearly lost his mojo.
He looks like
he?
He's going to shoot himself with an antique louver.
Like he's the next one to suicide himself.
Yeah.
So he's talking about Grunwald, that he's working on it, but it's all a bit, And then Polly eventually just, you know, says, look, kind of what's wrong? And he's like,
talk.
What's right? And I get no joy from my life. And he's just clearly at his wit's end. I'm really worried about him.
There's a really lovely bit where Polly's talking to him and she sort of stood on her side. You get this weird side profile of her while she's talking to her husband, who's like obviously scanning the room for things he can start self-harming with. and I just noticed she's got the most beautifully smooth face, if you see it in profile.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's literally flat. Quite incredible. She's like a women's institute, you know, Voldemort. But without being Voldemort at all. She's just got this naturally smooth face. It's beautiful.
She's had many names in this podcast, but never the W.I. Voldemort. I really
there you go.
That's a good one. Yeah. I mean, she's often evil. I think that's a fair description.
Oh, is she? Oh, okay.
Character.
I just thought she was like a woman in a loveless marriage and we had to feel constantly sorry.
She
for
is
her.
that, but she's been pretty vindictive in her time. Like, don't feel sorry for
her. What sort of things has she done?
I mean, she's endlessly cruel to her daughter, who ended up getting so fed up she'd moved to America to get away from her, basically.
Right, okay.
It's always sort of misguided. There are some good intentions in there, but she's really selfish and really obsessed with status and wealth and money and da-da-da-da.
Oh, okay.
Hence the loveless marriage to somebody who can, you know, pay her credit card bills.
Also, at one point, we don't know how she did it, but she actually caused the Suez Canal crisis, and we just don't know how she did it.
Yes, she did do that.
We don't know how she did it, but somehow it all comes to her.
It's definitely her fault. There can be no doubt.
No doubt.
So we leave the very unhappy couple sort of at an impasse.
Desperate and depressing. It's really well done, those scenes in the house.
Yeah.
You really do get that. Oh my God, one of you just say something, comfort each other, do something, please. Yes. It's too much. Tension is
the
horrible.
The oppressive atmosphere.
Yeah, it's done really well.
Is great. Then we go to the yard where Emma, slightly oddly, because I think she, by this point, it's obvious just from her performance, she fancies Tom. She definitely has
Tom. Oh, okay.
She offers to come to the bank with him on Monday and to see Mrs. Travis's solicitor. So the widow of the man who was killed tragically in the boating accident. You know, she's told Tom she's not a vindictive woman, but she will be suing him for thousands of pounds and ruining his business because of her dead husband. Another dead husband, you see. So then we cut to helicopter day.
Wow.
Two people inside, probably Charles and Avril, that you can't really see through the window.
No.
And they're landing at a French chateau.
Not only are they landing at a French chateau, they're landing directly next to the door. The helicopter lands about an inch from the door.
It does. But can I just shock you, Paul?
Go on.
It's not a French chateau.
Oh, no. Get away with you.
I've been there. It's Waddesdon Manor.
Oh, come on.
In this country.
Oh,
and it was built in a kind of French chateau style.
Oh.
It is not. It's no more French than you or I.
Secrets and lies. Television lies.
But the last time they went there, I think in series two, they've tidied up one detail. The helicopter landed. Charles went there with somebody else.
Right.
It landed outside Le French Chateau. And the side of the helicopter said the name of a Bedford-based helicopter hire company. At least this time they've given it the Freer Holdings decal, stuck to the side of the helicopter, looks a bit more convincing, you know.
Yeah.
They've shelled out for a sticker, which is great. Avril and Charles land to be met by Pierre.
Pierre.
The French retainer.
Be my guest. Basically.
He is a candlestick.
Yeah,
He's dressed as a candlestick.
Yeah. But our wine stills the test.
And they are going to.
And that's exactly what they're going to do.
Avril just keeps being more and more dazzling and impressive. She speaks with great fluency to Pierre in his mother tongue.
She does, yes.
Bonsoir, Pierre, she says. Oh, hee-haw, hee-haw.
And that's done really well. It's not done in a remotely allo-allo style.
No. She's good at French.
Yeah.
Susan Gilmore can speak French
really
well.
Good.
Then we go back to the yard where Tom and Jack are having a little sort of odd conversation after hours. Jack says, it looks as if you're in the clear. And then he sort of finds a way of saying to Tom,
sorry.
Obviously, dramatic irony, Tom wants to tell Jack that he's bringing in the last thing he wants, outside money.
Yeah, he sort of apologises to Tom, doesn't he, about his Bluffo Cove ways. And
exactly.
Sorry for a bit of burden on you at times.
It then stops Tom telling him the truth about Jan, because now Jan's investment is looking like the only lifeline they've got.
Yes, and we really do know that the only thing Jack really is doing in that filing cabinet is just rifling around trying to find the tequila bottle that he's taped to the top.
Exactly, he's just looking for the next hit.
Yeah.
Probably a bong or something. but yes, yeah, so there's a nice moment between the two of them, but it does kind of stop Tom telling him the truth about Jan. Then we go back to Leisure Cruise saxophone.
Oh, wow.
I love the saxophone.
Ken back in his office.
Ken, I've put, is leaning in lemon.
Just
wearing a lemon
looking
shirt.
Very casually citrus.
He is, but he's looking a bit despondent. He's drinking on his own in his office at night. That's never a good sign, is it? And then he looks at the picture of him and Mark and Sarah in happier times holding the trophy after they won that race.
Yeah.
And he can't look at it. He just turns it over. He puts it down. He can't look at it.
Welcome to All Rather Mysterious, the podcast that aims to unlock the mysteries of the past with the key of fact. My name is John Rain.
My name is Eleanor Morton.
My name is David Reed.
Please join us as we present to you mysteries that have baffled the world.
You had any noises?
What about a door creaking?
No, you don't have to do
that. That weird kadunk that lights going off makes for some reason in films.
All Rather Mysterious.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Then we go back to the Howard's house where Leo tells his gran breathlessly he can't come to the races. He's going diving with Jack, presumably to look for wreckage.
I've got something to do in this episode, Gran.
Yes, suddenly I have a purpose.
Yes.
God, this is my moment to shine.
As long as you don't go away, start diving utterly pointlessly, and then we have to wait a little bit and come back to you, and then you finally come up trumps. Oh, you're going to do
about
that, fine.
Three times.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Up
this unnecessary padding that goes on here is brilliant.
It's a lot of extra scenes I don't think we need.
Yeah.
Right. Then we go straight to the boat where Leo is suddenly there. He's time traveled to the boat in diving gear. He's suddenly there. And he's there with Amanda, who doesn't seem to have her direction. Like, her notes for this scene are confusing because she looks bored, like she would rather be anywhere else doing anything else.
Yes.
And she just sits there and says, oh, yes, thanks, Mr. Rolf. Thanks very much. But she's rolling her eyes and looking fed up. Leo's keen as mustard to get down there and
find
the...
Keen. He's like a really overzealous little Labrador that's going to do something for its master. And she just looks like, oh, this is the most boring thing in the world to do, to solve a mystery.
I know. They're basically the Famous Five. Like, come on. Meanwhile, over at the Coast Guard's, Tom is asking if there are any reports of submerged objects in the water. Like, you think they'd have asked that ages ago.
Yonks ago with the Coast Guard.
Like, really a long time ago.
As soon as the accident happened, get straight on it.
I think that would have been one of the first stops. Emma's there too. She's clearly now just following him everywhere he goes until he notices her.
Yes.
Sort of lovely, lovely hair and gives her a
kiss. I like how when Jack asks this, the Coast Guard guy looks in his little diary, which is all handwritten. Well, let's have a look. Last week, hit a mermaid. Should have done that. Now there's nothing there about... Oh, hang on. No, there is. It's like the evidence is in front of him, which he denies at first. And
yes,
then, oh,
exactly.
No, hang on. Sorry.
But ultimately, he's got nothing concrete that can really help them with their case. So they kind of leave empty-handed. Back at the chateau, Avril and Charles are on horseback. They're doing horseback acting.
Horseback act. Now, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
I've done horseback acting, and that's really hard to do.
Tell me when you did horseback acting.
Oh, years and years and years ago for an advert in Devon.
You only take jobs in Devon, right?
A lot of my work has been heavily Devon-based. So, yeah, I did a kids' TV series called Mr. Sheep Pup, which was a bit like Pig in the City, where they film real animals and we provide the voices. And I did a film and three series of it. But the joy of it is I did it with Unicef. Stubbs, Brian Blessed, Mel Gedroych.
It was just
the best thing in the world. Especially,
that's splendid.
Very rarely did we often meet because we often did our stuff sort of. But we had a wrap party for the last series down in the farm in Devon where it was filmed. And I shared a hot tub with Brian Blessed.
You never did.
Why didn't
I know this?
And it was utter madness.
Oh, my God. I bet that was a party.
It was
bloody hell.
Brilliant. Yeah, it was such good fun.
You've gotten hammered with Brian Blessed.
Yeah, oh, my word.
So jealous. I'm so jealous.
Brian, as we all know, it's been covered in every time he's on screen. He doesn't know that he has Tourette's, but he has Tourette's. So every third word is fucking shit. He just can't stop going. So he once said to me, my milkman, a woman. Gosh, yes, Brian. And he told me something that I will not say on this podcast, but I'll tell you
after. Oh, that'd be lovely. Yeah. My favourite story about him, and there are many, but I like the one I think Kenneth Branagh told when he was doing a production of, I think it was a Kenneth Branagh story, but anyway, there's a production of Hamlet where he was playing Claudius, Brian was, and Virginia McKenna, lovely, delicate, beautiful actress, was
also
playing
Virginia McKenna,
his wife, the Queen of Denmark, and the director was trying to sort of big cast meeting, let's all work out what everyone's motivations are.
Yeah.
And he said something about, you know, so what, and what do we think Claudius wants in this scene? And Brian just goes, he just wants to fuck her, doesn't he? And she apparently she just blanched. She went quite pale.
I'm hoping like, that sort of stuff went on in the studio when maybe Una was there. Because I can imagine Una like being, oh, right, well, yes, I'm off now.
He sounds like a very interesting character.
Yes, he is. Bless.
The last thing I heard on Twitter a few years ago, he has a Twitter account, I think it's run by an assistant of his.
Yes.
But he was down for a charity space hopper bounce at Bryce Norton, an RAF base in the south of England. And the only reason he couldn't do it, Paul, was because he fell off the roof of his pigeon coop when he was trying to fix it himself in his 80s. He was trying to fix the roof and he fell off and hurt his shoulder. Otherwise, he was bang on for the charity space hopper bounce at an RAF base.
That means...
I mean, the man doesn't say no to anything. He's amazing.
All I can imagine is the day that Brian fell off the chicken coop that at an 80-mile radius, all everyone heard was...
Echoing like
two birds coming out of trees and people,
yes, oh yes,
people
yes,
dropping you... things. I'm just gonna finish icing this cake. That sort of comedy trope.
I love him so much.
I know,
so
he's
much.
Stunning.
Anyway, where were we? That's right. So, what scene did we get to? You're gonna remember,
we have diving, the Coast Guard. Then we have the reveal of torsional stress factors. It's finally told, and they know, and then
we're
it cuts to diving
chateau.
Again. Then we're at the chateau, horseyback riding, and then we
That's
get the
right.
final sort of like Charles sealing the deal, and Avril going, you're not going to ruin my life like you always do again, are you? And he goes, no, not this time.
Yeah, no, it'll be fine this time, don't worry.
As you see him crossing his fingers behind his back.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, can I trust you again? It's like, well,
like,
what do
not
you think,
at
love?
All, no.
Yeah, you're in this show. You've seen how he behaves. Not honourably with chicks, ever. Then back at the races, Kate is yelling at horses as
now,
per.
Here we go. Now, listen, the races is very important because I've actually got the horses that ran on that day.
Oh,
so
great.
Here we go. So if you were betting on the day, 2-1, Hovercraft Jessica. You could have betted on Muck Woman, Terence Trent Darby's Holographic Wrist, the late runner, that one. Matt Gordon, 4-1. St. Swithin's Day Ghost. You might want to put your money 3-8 on Divorce Disco or The Little Tutting Egg. Meanwhile, late starter, Fantasy Uncle, followed by The Little Wooden Judge. Coming up at the rear, Dandruff Chronicles, The Furry Umbrella Hospital, and Ken Hom's Infected Moon.
Could you just take over a minute while I calm
Yeah,
down?
Okay. Well, because at no point... Oh, this is brilliant, because we're on camera at the moment and I could just see Julia sobbing. Lovely. They never mention a name of a horse all the way through it. There's plenty of opportunities for them, because Charles goes, I lost, and she goes, oh, I've won. But she never says, I won £400 on Divorce Disco. So I just thought, and I had a little, they show a bit of the horses getting ready and there's 12 of them. So I just came up with 12 horses for you.
12, your work always goes above and beyond.
I always do my homework for you.
I cannot thank you. Thank you so much. That was really good.
I had a lot of money on Ken Hom's Infected Moon. But of course, on the day was St. Swithin's Day Ghost. Mostly followed by Little Tutting Egg and bringing
I'd
up
have backed
rear.
The egg. I'd have, yeah, yeah, I'd
Fantasy
have backed that
uncle.
One. You Burke.
Yes.
You lovely Burke. But no, so it's the first meeting between Sir Edward and Kate.
Yes, and she's
so much
quite
more contemporaries,
really,
than,
isn't she?
Yeah, she doesn't give much away, but she doesn't want to have a glass of champagne in his box.
Yes, care to join me in my private box? No, thank you.
Not interested. She's got stuff to do. Also, it's never mentioned again. Kate is living now in her daughter's house with her.
Right.
Having had to sell her cottage.
Gambling debts.
To pay off gambling debts.
Yes. Now,
so
that,
she was
that
supposed
was even
to be...
in the episode that I did with you all those yonks ago.
Right.
She was talking about her horses and her debts.
Yeah, she's not supposed to be gambling anymore, but now it's just fine and she's back to gambling again.
Wow, so if they were doing Howard's Way now, she'd have a real problem with those fruit machines. She'd be in there every day, wouldn't she?
She's a gambling addict.
Throwing the inheritance.
It seems mad that she's back at the racecourse. But anyway, Sir Edward says after she goes, delightful lady, through clenched teeth.
Yeah.
I don't think he means it, because she kind of taunted him about the poor form of his own horses at the end. So I don't think he likes
again,
her very
much.
Again,
that lovely passive-aggressive thing that she's got.
She's very good at it.
Yeah.
She's very good at it. Back at sea, Leo and Amanda are in the water in diving suits and doing in-the-water diving suit acting like shrugging, can't find any bits of boat. And Jack's looking sad about that. Then we go to the wine cellar en France, where wow. Charles and Avril are tasting red wine.
Testing the claret and 1982 Beaujolais, etc.
Nice.
It looks like Avril challenges him to a drinking game at one point.
She definitely does. I think had the words of her father to get him drunk and ask him for money.
Yes.
She's basically taking him at his word because she grabs two bottles like one for me,
you,
one for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, come on, off we go.
And you know, and she clearly wants to get him shit-faced. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't think that'll be very difficult. Although Charles strikes me as a control freak, so don't know. He's the kind of person who would wait till he'd point out the window and go, look, something French out the window, and then tip it into a plant pot.
Oh, okay.
And then say another and fill hers again.
Or maybe replace the wine with slightly cheaper vintage because he doesn't want to spend that much.
Exactly.
I can imagine doing that as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's definitely that kind of guy. So the seduction is going well. She's game for it. She's basically saying, I want to get drunk with you. I've come all the way to France with you. I believe there's only one bedroom in this giant chateau.
Yes.
Oh dear, what a shame. We'll have to share it together. So anyway, we leave them sort of heading down that road. Back at the pub, Leo and Amanda are now out of boat, back in warm jumpers, and Jack brings them drinks. Leo a pint, which I thought was sarcastic, in a pint jug, and then Amanda a little half pint pot. I think they could have just swapped those around quite easily and that would have been fine.
That would have been
and
perfect.
Then Jack with a whiskey. Everyone's despondent, but Leo's optimistic. It's okay. We've only got to search the rest of the sea.
Yes, that's right.
It won't take long.
Let's go alphabetically. Let's start with the Atlantic. Oh no. You only get to see channels. That's where it is, channel.
Or S, the Solent.
Yes, the Solent.
Anyway, you should know this. Then back in France, so we are skipping around quite quickly now.
Yeah.
Back in France, Avril is now looking through. Charles is showing her his etchings.
His etchings. His childhood etchings.
It's like the paintings he did as a young man.
Yeah.
He keeps them in France because paintings are French.
Yes.
So that's where you keep the paintings.
They have no business being in England. In fact, if he bought them over the Channel, they'd burst into flames.
Exactly.
Especially the stuff he paints.
And there's a weird bit of business, although I quite like the script in this scene where he's showing her a picture of a sort of an old woman with a warty nose.
Yeah.
And he's like, is that your governess? And you know, he's embellished it because he didn't really like his governess. He's made her look more warty.
Well, I left the hairs out.
It's horrible detail. But it's quite funny. But it's kind of charming. And then he's clearly softening towards her, but kind of waiting to go in for the kill. They're sitting on the floor. It's all very, cozy.
Yeah.
They're both a bottle of wine down each.
Exactly.
Big red noses.
And, huge port noses. Clear veins breaking in the
burst
nose.
Burst capillaries.
They're
yeah,
so
exactly.
pissed she's now starting to appreciate his watercolours. No, actually, they're very good.
This is brilliant. That's really good.
Not many people control ice cream vans like you know, and that sort of thing.
Yes, and she says to him, please don't break me again.
Don't break me again. Oh no.
And he's like, yeah, all right, I won't. And then just sticks his tongue in her mouth. But you know, it looks like a mutually satisfying snog. They're both quite happy to be doing it. Back at Leisure Cruise, Sarah's doing that weird thing of sitting in an office in the dark on her own at night alone. I mean, what if Ken hadn't come in? Would she just have stayed there to make a point?
She's like sat on a vigil.
It's really, really odd.
She's on a vigil of her own making.
Exactly.
She should have been really staring out to sea.
Exactly. It's the evening. There's no suggestion that Ken had planned to meet her there. So he just happens to come back to the office on his own at night in the dark as well.
Why is Ken coming back at 3 a.m. to his office?
Don't know. And basically there's a very uncomfortable standoff. She sits there looking like a sort of sad ghost and he's like, do you mind if I put the lights on? And he basically, because he knows there's no charming her out of the situation. There's
no
schmooze he can do that will get her to bring her around. So he just decides to go straight in for the kill and say, look, I want your shares. Are you going to sell them to me?
I know.
She's like, oh yes, I'm ready to sell. And he's like, great.
But not to you. Oh, you little turncoat.
Right,
this is my revenge. This is my revenge.
Yeah, and then he's like, well, to who then?
A certain
and she says,
Sam, Yosemite Sam, ever heard of him? And that's a real plot twist for Howard's Way, I think.
The real
plot
twist.
When they start getting in 2D animation.
J.R. Ewing.
A certain Barnes, Cliff Barnes.
That would have been amazing. See, that would have been a way to end the episode.
Yeah.
No, obviously she suggests, I mean, without knowing if he's interested, she suggests selling to Charles Freer.
Yeah. Well, there's only two or three options, so there aren't many people you can do that to.
Yeah, what
who are you selling it to?
Jan
the guy who runs the pasty shop. I mean, who do you think?
The
There's only four rich people in this entire peninsula, so it's going to be one of them.
Your milkman, a woman?
A woman.
That's who I'm selling to. So anyway, at the mention of Charles, obviously we go straight back to Charles, topless in bed. He's lying next to Avril, also in bed, also topless, with like sheets up to, you know, there.
Yeah.
And clearly they've had it
off.
They've
been doing it.
Gerald's on the phone with bad news for a change. Something about, you know, that company doing the thing and they haven't done the thing and that's annoying. Initials.
I'm really sorry, Zurich. Charles. We tried sending some of your paintings to Tony Hart, but they're not going in the gallery.
Oh, God, don't. Don't, because I sent paintings and I never got mine in the gallery.
I sent two paintings and they were never, ever accepted.
It hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. Anyway, bad news. He doesn't take it well. Back at sea, Jack pulls Amanda back up to the surface of the water on a rope. She says, nothing. So we've established they searched a bit more of the sea.
A bit more of the sea.
Different bit this time, though. You can see it's a different bit.
Another fathom of the sea.
Yeah, still nothing.
And then like some sort of massively happy bloody otter, he comes bursting out.
So exciting.
We got it. We found it.
Woohoo! He's holding up a bit of broken wood, which we assume is the keel.
Must be a bit of the catamaran keel, yeah.
One of the keels. Wouldn't it have two keels?
Should have two keels, yeah. I'm not entirely sure what bit he's got.
No, but anyway, it seems significant. Leo's very, very happy, but he has to let you know that. He has to get his... Presumably, there, you know, the director's there going, right, get your mask off. No, yeah. Get your mask off.
See the face.
See your eyes.
See the face.
Yeah. So he's kind of struggling. Eventually, he rushes, gets his mask off, and you can see he's delighted. And Jack's delighted, and Amanda's delighted. Amanda doesn't look bored anymore.
No, she's suddenly, I don't know, this. Oh, right, you found it. Good. Right, now we can go pub and celebrate.
Anyway, keel, all good. Probably everything's fine. We'll all be home by tea time. The war will be over by Christmas. Titles. End of episode.
I know. This episode ends on a high, like a positive. There's no drama. It's all, everything's great. Does that happen a lot in Howard's Way?
No, I don't think it does. Very rarely. Very rarely. Yeah. It makes quite a nice change. And it makes the upbeat Barracuda theme tune just really like,
God, that end theme is so good.
It's triumphant.
I prefer it to the opening theme so much.
Me too. I think I'm with you. I should have asked you to sing to the Barracuda theme. Maybe I'll do that. I've missed a trick this series. I should have done that, I think. Well, anyway, talking of that, though, are you prepared to sing?
Of course I am, Julie. Yes! You know I am.
You love it.
I loves it.
Paul, thank you so much for coming back to Tarrant. As it's been an absolute joy as ever.
Thank you.
You are wonderful. Thank you, Paul, for being always there.
Extra on Howard's Way, working 9 hours a day. I have no words to say, I'm just background. Although there is one cause for alarm that could do my reputation some harm. It's in the contract, read the small print. Now I must sleep with Ken.
My name's Jason Fleming. The More Than My Past podcast will see me talking to a wide range of inspiring people. People who have confronted and overcome addiction or imprisonment or both and turned their lives around.
I did mad things that was hurting myself and hurting other people.
Everybody grows up in a house called normal. Heroin addiction and chaos was my normal.
Some people don't understand the word moderation, and I was definitely one of those people.
The More Than My Past podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.